Hello, it's Dr. Peter Matthews here for my final podcast with Professor Kirsty Wimry on women, feminism and social policy. So in our last podcast, we talked about really big ideas, stuff, universal basic income. We had a bit of a Barney about that, but I think it's quite good. We ended a good point there. But now I just want to spend just 5-10 minutes thinking about, well, what's specifically happening now in the UK? What are some of the issues? What's changing in welfare policy that's affecting women in particular at the moment?
Okay, so we have within the UK generally and within Scotland specifically several kind of trains of development of policy that are going a certain direction, will probably carry on going in the same direction regardless of whether we exit the EU or regardless of any other external shocks at the moment. One is the move towards things like universal credit instead of the previous quite complex system of benefits that people were entitled to based on various contingencies. And the idea behind this does seem to be fairly reasonable in that if you create a simpler system, it will be fairer. And if you take out some of the disincentives that are involved with separating out housing benefit and separating out various elements of it, that it will work to alleviate the kind of poverty and exclusion that is experienced by people. That again is an example of where that looks great in practice, in theory, but if you unpick it, it's got quite gendered implications. One is around, again, it's predicated on this notion of a family-based income. It's predicated on a universal breadwinner type model, and so the income is assessed on the needs of the family rather than individuals within it. It doesn't give women access to an independent resource or an independent income. Other things that are happening around and similar sort of things that will always be an issue, which is around the ageing population. How do we provide services for what could be seen as a social policy success, actually, in that we have increasing numbers of people living to a ripe old age, needing kind of healthcare and support well into their 90s. That's actually a good thing. I'm quite pleased that that is happening. And the fact that it's seen as the demographic time bomb, I think, is unnecessarily scaremongering type language. It's down to things like universal healthcare and reduced levels of poverty, etc. And that is down to the welfare state. So that's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But it does leave us with a huge problem in that we have increasing numbers of people who are needing NHS services, needing healthcare services and social care services, a reduced pot of state funding available to meet those needs. And particularly if we look at it, and there's some really interesting things if you look at it within Scotland, because we've had a policy within Scotland that looks quite progressive and fair, which is a cap on local taxation. So poll tax, etc. in Scotland hasn't gone up. People are not paying an awful lot of more money into their local authorities.
Yeah, through council tax.
Through council tax and all of those kind of... And any commission that's had any kind of discussion about how you reform this, we've had several commissions in Scotland, and none of them have come up with any kind of politically acceptable solution to this. So we still pay, arguably, much too little in council tax in Scotland. The reality of that means that local authorities do not have enough money to provide what we would like to see for not just our grandparents and our parents, but also for ourselves as we get older and need the kind of care and support. So we're going to be increasingly, unless that changes, unless a lot more money goes into the infrastructure and the pot, we're going to be increasingly reliant upon unpaid care and on families and communities to step up and provide that. That has huge gendered implications, because we do know that unpaid care in the community essentially means care by families, and that essentially means care by women.
Yeah. And if you look at what's happened in England, where the local government cuts have been even worse and more dramatic, it's a just catastrophe is care for older people in England, social care.
Absolutely, yes. So in a sense, that needs sorting, and that needs sorting on a kind of citizenship and social rights basis for the in the interest of all of us.
Yeah,
really.
It's a long-term issue.
That's a long-term structural issue. Yeah. It's not going to go away.
And a bit like 10 years ago when there was a consensus around changing pensions policy, there needs to be that long-term 40-year consensus of this is going to happen, we need to do something about it, rather than just
sitting here. And I think it's interesting. Everybody knows that, has known that in policy terms for years.
Yeah.
But the problem around ageing and those sort of big long-term reform projects is that they are inevitably, they're going to take longer to sort out than one parliamentary term. Mm. So it's in no one political party's interests to say, for example, within the Scottish context, with the SNP to say we're going to do X, Y and Z, because the benefits of that policy will be seen 15, 20 years down the line when it might be Labour in power and Labour taking all of the credit for it. And that's not politically feasible. Yeah. So there's an interesting intersection there between politics and policy.
And I suppose you've also got, to go back to our first podcast, you've also just got the ongoing issues of low-paid work, low-skilled work, benefits being sanctioned that are leading to just growing income poverty, which means, and we know that these are faced more by women, so women's lot is just worse now
than it was before
2008.
And I think there is an interesting difference, policy divergence here, between Scotland and the rest of the UK, particularly around approaches to childcare and investment in those kinds of areas. Because we have seen moves towards, you know, further provision of childcare within the UK, but that's very much seen as a kind of, this is a cost to the economy. Mm. This is it's balanced, you know, this has got to come out of taxation income. Whereas the thinking, the values behind the policies, if you like, if you look at both the white papers and the way in which the Scottish Parliament debates this within the Scottish context, is much more about an investment. Mm. This is a social investment on two grounds. One, it's a social investment in the future citizen workers of Scotland, if you like, and childcare is about providing education and support. And it goes back to something we were saying in a previous podcast about young children's poverty, and we know that income inequality is pretty much set in stone by the age of five, so we've got to get to children really early on. But the other one, and there is an increase, and this has changed, particularly with the change of leadership from Alex Salmond to Nicola Sturgeon, in having a leader who is very overtly feminist, non-apologetically feminist about her policy aims and objectives, that this is about women's equality and women's poverty, women's access to the labour market and women's income, and also women's income as workers in the childcare sector. Mm. And she's looked at it very much across those broad areas. So there's a much more nuanced understanding of all those complexities we were talking about in previous podcasts, about, you know, if you unravel this and if you do this, then it has a certain impact on women. If you do something else, it has another impact on women. I think there's a lot more kind of nuanced, intelligent policymaking, if you like, evidence-based policymaking happening within the Scottish context than there is happening within the Westminster context.
And goes back to a point you made in the first podcast as well about is men making policy in the UK context, and perhaps if it was a woman in the DWP in England, for the UK, then some different policies emerging there.
I mean, it's an interesting debate, particularly within feminist social policy. Just by getting more women politicians, do you get more feminist social policy?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a given, because Margaret Thatcher famously was the most unfeminist politician you could imagine. But it does make a difference.
Yeah.
We have seen work done by my colleagues Fiona Mackay and Meryl Kenny at the University of Edinburgh have looked specifically at that question, whether female politicians have a different set of values and focus their concentration on a different set of policies than men do. And they do.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's an argument for broadening the policy context and broadening the body politic, which is why we should be arguing for not just for 50-50 and getting more women into parliament and politics, but a broader section of society generally into politics. If we had more people in politics who had experience of poverty, who had experience of disability, who had experience of racism, who had experience of different kind of you know, the LGBT community, different kind of religious backgrounds, etc., we would see policies that reflected the diverse nature of those communities and those needs. Whereas at the moment we have policy that really reflects who makes the policy, which is overwhelmingly white, publicly educated, middle class men and some women, but the women that are there are also quite elite, well-educated women who wouldn't necessarily have personal experience of the issues that are faced by lone parents living in poverty, for example.
It also brings in a point I'll be making in another lecture in this module as well, the need to bring in user, service user voice and sort of empower the people who experience these things out in the wider world to bring their voices into policy making as well.
Absolutely. And we see that within disability policy, the way in which self-directed support has been developed as a policy within the Scottish context, that it drew on the voices of people who had direct experiences of using services. It drew on the voices of people who were carers and people who were paid carers and people who had experience of working in providing those services. And again, that's the different kind of policy-making context that you get in Scotland, because you've got a much smaller policy community and you've got communities of interest who do work in cooperation with each other than the Westminster model of policy development, whereby policymakers in terms of the civil service and the elected politicians are that much more distanced from the communities who are actually affected by the policies.
So they're making policy for 70 million people rather than
absolutely.
Six. Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much.